Welcome to the Florida Specifier Podcast. This is Brett Cyphers, and I'm joined today by my co-host and fellow members of the Specifier Editorial Board. First, our editor-in-chief, Patrick Gillespie, who's an advisor with Adams and Reese. Then there's Jeff Littlejohn. He's with National Stormwater Trust, On-Site Performance, and he's also a senior advisor at Adams and Reese Law Firm. Next, we have Ryan Matthews. Ryan is a government affairs expert. That's objective expert with the Gray Robinson Law Firm. I'm the government affairs director for Sea and Shoreline, and I also host another podcast called Water for Fighting. Gentlemen, it is great to be with you today.
Thanks for having us. I like your new studio.
Yes, we have an official Florida Specifier Media studio. There's nothing on the walls.
Spartan.
Specifier Media. I like the sound of that.
I like the call, yeah.
We should see if that name's available before somebody takes it.
I think it's already taken.
Dang it. All right.
Is it?
Is that right?
That's unfortunate.
We'll figure it out.
I have written in bold here, greetings and small talk. I was hoping something more than just the name, although that is good, you know, that we name the studio. But how are we doing? We're getting close to holiday season. Actually, we're kind of in the midst of the holidays.
Is anybody traveling for Thanksgiving?
Thank goodness, no.
I sure hope not.
I'm driving.
You're driving?
No flying.
Okay. Sorry.
Where are you going, Patrick?
Down to the kind of south of the Space Coast. Down that side.
We're still all, a little vague.
We're all Floridians here. You're not talking to somebody from Milwaukee.
Sebastian. County? Sebastian, okay.
Thank you. Actually, you told me that before.
I did.
But you didn't tell the rest of the world, and so I appreciate you. I do have family coming in from parts unknown. Actually, they're very well known. Jacksonville.
What is your Thanksgiving drink of choice?
Boy, if they already start with the eggnog, like, I'm okay with like kicking it off that way. Otherwise, it's bourbon.
What was that? The eggnog.
It's a
heavy drink when you're eating.
That's more of a Thanksgiving meal. Not a Thanksgiving.
No, this is not while I'm eating the Thanksgiving meal. This is like later that night. I'm gonna take some crap for this. Like, but it's not the eggy eggnog. There's this type of eggnog that you can get in Publix. It's actually rather not thick, and it goes great with bourbon.
Okay.
I think I would like that drink, but less of the eggnog.
Just
the bourbon.
Eggnog and bourbon minus the eggnog.
Yeah, minus the eggnog.
Yeah. So let's talk about next week. Actually, as this is coming out this week, the committee week number 4, we are getting closer and closer as these weeks get shorter because they take time off for the various holidays between now and when session starts at the beginning of January. Ryan, why don't you talk a little bit about what typically happens, you know, as we kind of close out the November committee weeks, you know, in terms of what that looks like heading into the end of the year.
Most legislative committees are still in the process of hearing presentations either by various agencies or entities throughout the state. We've kind of evolved from the first committee, second committee week, pleasantries and platitudes to now more substantive work is being done. And next week, committee week number 4, we've talked a little bit about the topic on this show, but the property tax proposals that the House has put forward will actually be heard in committee. So I'd imagine there will be, you know, robust debate and questions about the potential, I don't want to say fallout, but just reaction to those policies if they are put into place. The Senate has not yet released anything on property taxes. So that, as we've, you know, told the listeners, is going to be an evolving issue and one that probably lasts throughout the session. Now, the House has said that they would like to pass whichever of their proposals actually do pass to be put on the ballot in November 26, that first week of session, so January 13th. But there are, you know, multiple questions. What happens if all of them pass? Because they would conflict with one another.
Right.
And so I think the Senate seems to be taking an extended timeline in terms of their response and what they would like to see done. But that's going to be one of those big topics. So, you know, legislators will be, you know, working significantly in committee week 4 and 5, I would imagine, before we break for the holidays. And I think we have actually 2 committee weeks in December. So we've got 3 more committee weeks before the holiday season where everybody will kind of take that last breath before we start the sprint January 13th. So legislators are not only here to listen and debate bills, but they're also fundraising, which is priority when you're going into an election year.
And that's why we have an early session to begin with, right? And now you're dealing with the fundraising that is, you know, that is going hot and heavy. Can you talk a little bit about, just for folks that may not know, you know, complying with the law, trying to make sure they're doing it in the right way and in times that they're here. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Sure. Well, I mean, there are, I guess we can start at the 50,000 foot level. There are two type of donations that can be made to politicians. They have an election account, and the max contribution to an election account is $1,000 per person or per entity. And then they have political committees, which, you know, thanks to the U.S. Supreme Court, are unlimited the amount of money you could write to a political committee. Once session is actually gaveled in, they can no longer accept financial donations, so that's why there's a bit of a rush, if you will, to giving, contributing politically prior to January 13th, because at that point it would be illegal to provide a contribution.
Yeah, I know Jeff is a big fan of the no limits on the political committee giving.
I don't want a bunch of, you know, solicitations.
I just want to reach out to him. I'd love to help out. Let's talk about the money on the other end of the spectrum, meaning when you do session, you've got a deadline that's looming in the House. They typically have more stringent guidelines for how they approach a lot of these things, you know, and how they're dealing with bills, how they deal with committees, and also how they deal with appropriations or budget committee, as they put it. Can you talk a little bit about that deadline and what that means in the House, and does it mean anything at all in the Senate?
Sure. So the deadline to file an appropriation project, a member project in the House, is the 21st. And so we have seen through the state's economist, Amy Baker, a narrative being pushed that lawmakers, particularly in the next 1 to 5 years, could potentially be facing a quote-unquote fiscal cliff if certain reductions in recurring spending are not made. Now, there are multiple reasons for this and previous policies that have passed, not necessarily by this legislature or these presiding officers, but I think it's going to have a direct impact on the amount of member projects that ultimately make it over the finish line. You ask the difference between the House and the Senate. The Senate doesn't really have a filing deadline for appropriations projects, but the things that we have been hearing from both the House and the Senate is a couple things. You really want to keep your appropriations in the low dollar figure, and that I think that the chopping block will be ripe with member projects this year. I think they will be very, very selective in the types of projects that actually get included in the budget, because you're more likely than not going to see a budget that comes in under the $117 billion budget that we had last year.
Let me ask these Adams and Reese guys for a second, if you don't mind, Patrick, is, are y'all dealing with that? You all have some clients, you deal a lot of policy issues, heavy on that side, you know, with a lot of your clients. Is that something that, you know, in that communication, is that a part of, you know, how you're presenting, you know, what's coming up in the winter?
Yeah, absolutely. I think, you know, recognizing that there seems to be this $6 billion number kind of being thrown around as a talking point of what needs to be reduced in the budget. You know, I think everyone's wise to be really careful about what the ask is. I think the interesting part of that is with the property tax discussion, that's going to change a lot of calculations, particularly for local government. So how do you balance what may or may not be coming with, from a budgetary perspective on property taxes, whatever that looks like, with the state's budget, and then also trying to continue to run operations. So I think from a budgetary perspective, it's going to be a real interesting balance how this next session plays out. And it probably will open up the door for some interesting policy discussions, because you can push policy that doesn't necessarily have fiscal impacts. And so that may be something that takes a lot of attention of members this session.
And Jeff, I assume you're the resident taxation is theft, and therefore appropriating those dollars as considered money laundering, or is your position softened a bit?
Watch it.
You can leave it alone. I'm just messing with you. All right. So on that note, Patrick, tell us a little bit about the paper, the front page, their themes. I seem to notice a lot of water and a lot of really cool concrete looking things.
A lot of water. We did have a little bit of a kind of a pre-session preview, which is difficult not knowing what's going to be coming, but just sort of some high-level themes of what may be coming. But kind of not on purpose. We had a couple of really interesting articles about artificial reefs. One of them came from a group that is local to the Tallahassee area. They install artificial reefs kind of throughout the state, and they have honored a couple of Florida men who, and I don't say that in the typical way that people think of it, Carl Ennis and Bill Meichler, who were really involved in their organization, and they've put these different artificial reefs out around the state. And so I thought that was a cool story. And then you had Cape Canaveral, which is the first government to deploy these reef arches, which are designed for coastal protection and habitat restoration. And so, you know, not that artificial reefs are a brand new concept, but just kind of a couple cool stories that highlight how man's able to sort of create things that are mimicking nature and trying to replicate some of what that's designed to do.
And I have to say, so Angela Dreswecki, who I work with at Gray Robinson, Carl Ennis was her husband. He was a PJ, you know, unfortunately lost his life in Afghanistan in a helicopter accident. He was the guy you wanted running into the fire. I didn't get to know Carl very well, but from everything I've heard from Angela and his friends, I mean, he just sort of emulated service and just was a great guy. So I was thrilled to see that article as well.
Yeah, I think it's a nice legacy to leave, and yeah, I think it was a really good choice on your part, Patrick, to put that on the front page.
And it knocked the bear hunt off the front page.
I know you've been following that closely. You want to give us an update?
No, you can get your update on page 3. I see that there's a little update on the bear hunt, so thank you for keeping that in the news.
Just for you.
Appreciate that.
Yeah, y'all want to keep an eye on that one. So let's talk about our favorite articles. Ryan, what do you think?
So I know my favorite was the DOT Tampa Bay Water Quality Improvement Project, not only just because I, you know, have clients in the area, but I think it's a beautiful area of the state. I just enjoyed reading about the project and how you had the sort of the nexus between transportation improvement, a water quality improvement for Tampa Bay. I love the headline of a win-win-win. Those are the type of projects that you really want to kind of lift up and have folks know that, you know, when you're looking at improvement to a natural resource, there can be external benefits as well. And I thought it was just a well-written article.
Yeah, I think it's indicative of the kind of articles that we're putting in the specifier, which is you're not going to read that, you know, really anywhere else, at least not from that perspective. And so that's one of the things I really liked about that as well.
Well, and leave it to DOT to sort of like look at all the angles, right?
Yeah.
I mean, they're very project management oriented, and so to Ryan's point, to solve a transportation problem and then also factor in how do you also do a water improvement project as part of that, I think is a great message.
Jeff, what do you think?
Well, in keeping of the theme of covering things that you're not going to see in too many places, we've got another article on kind of leaning into policy and what may be coming down at the federal level. We're tracking an Endangered Species Act case that's happening here in Florida. It's Colosi versus Charlotte County and U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, and it has to do with whether a county can impose a mandatory, you know, species fee, you know, an impact fee. In this case, it's a scrub jay fee. It ended up being over $100,000 for his property to be able to develop basically put a house on a 5-acre piece of property, and so he challenged it. And the federal government and the county tried to have it dismissed. The judge overruled that, and so it is going to go to trial. So we're going to be following this. Could be implications on other habitat conservation plans and species impact programs that have been established around the state. So we'll continue to cover that.
Yeah, and I'm going to call my favorite the one written by the St. Johns River Water Management District. And it has to do with the work that they're doing with a lot of different folks, other state agencies, nonprofits, etc., to restore seagrass in the lower St. Johns River at this moment, kind of there and heading up to Lake George. They're doing a lot of great work. They're trying to figure out how to come back from hurricanes like Hurricane Irma, which is leaving a lot of extra water and a lot of extra tannins in that river, makes it hard for grasses, the SAB, to survive, which means it's harder for manatees, fish that you want to go out and catch, and all the rest of it. to make it. And so hats off to the North Florida Land Trust, hats off to the St. John's River Water Management District and Mike Register and that entire gang. And so, yeah, that's a really good one.
So before we transition here, I do want to make a solicitation for those of you who are out there and have ideas for articles. Please always send those to Patrick or anyone really on the team. Patrick's just the most qualified to actually put them into words and place them in the paper. But we are constantly looking for different articles about projects that are going on throughout the state and would love to feature you in our upcoming issue. And speaking about issues and podcasts, Brett, let's talk a little bit about some of the recent ones we have done. You and I recorded a podcast today with Steve and Terry Lewis, who formed Lewis, Longman, and Walker. That was just a great conversation. Yeah. And hearing, you know, the 40, 50 years of their experience, not only in environmental law and environment, but also just the Environmental Permitting Summer School and how the origin of that came about.
Yeah, I that's a really interesting one. We could have spent 3 hours easy and just scratching the surface in terms of that. And also that kind of like personal life experience that Terry and Steve both bring to that. Looking forward to maybe getting them on again in the future. I'm going to turn it back because my first one was not that one. It was mentioning the one that you did down in Marco Island. And it's a great conversation that the current DEP Secretary Alexis Lambert had with you and three other of your fellow former secretaries, the agency. I tend not to like doing luncheons with speakers. That was probably the most interesting one that I've seen. And so that I enjoyed listening to that, even though I didn't really have anything to do with doing, which is probably why it was so good.
Well, and frankly, all credit goes to Secretary Lambert on that. She wanted to do something a little bit different. And so when we had, you know, Hamilton and Steverson and Vineyard and myself already there, it seemed like a good idea to get on stage and answer some questions and ask each other some questions. And obviously, it's unique to see the different styles, not only, you know, leadership on various issues, but even Herschel, the sharpest dressed man in Marco Island.
Glorious. Yeah. I also roughed it down in Key West at a conference and at the AWRA conference, which more importantly, I got to record Adam Blaylock, Kim Sugar, and Omar Franco. That one has done really well. Good conversation. And I was happy to do it, even in such rough conditions. And then we had one that just came out by the time people hear this last week with Lisa Moore, and she is the president and co-founder of Save Crystal River. Interesting woman, an absolute dynamo. Been volunteering for over a decade trying to fix a place, which is Crystal River, Kings Bay, Homosassa River. And it was a real joy to talk to her and get to know her more. So events, I did not put anything in there. Ryan, you have access to our actual print version of the paper. Can you...
Can I rattle around the paper in this podcast?
That way people know it's legit. And yes, you can get a print.
Let's talk about what's happening here upcoming. We're in November, correct? It's almost Thanksgiving. So we're actually going to move forward into 2026, Brett. Ooh. So we could be talking about upcoming events for a while now, because in late January, January 27th to 28th, at the Florida Hotel and Conference Center in the Florida Mall is the Florida Groundwater Conference. Oh. So you can go to a conference at a mall.
Those are your people, aren't they? Were you?
Mall people or groundwater people?
Groundwater people.
I do enjoy groundwater people. This is the American Groundwater Trust, so not necessarily my old folks, but still good. Also in late January, January 23rd at FGCU, the Cohen Center, we got the 35th Annual Southwest Florida Water Resources Conference. This is a conference of professional associations and educational institutions to host an annual meeting on regional water resources. So two events in late January to be on the lookout for. Everything else is past March, so I'm sure we'll have another opportunity to talk about that. And then obviously we'll continue to talk about the upcoming 40th Annual Environmental Permitting Summer School, July 21st through 24th
in
Marco Island.
Yeah, we're doing a big lead up to it. It's going to be a lot of fun, mostly because I like talking to the people that are involved in it, like Steve and Terry Lewis. I mean, that was, you know, a lot of fun, especially the parts where they make fun of Jeff. That was my...
We got a shot in at Steverson, too.
I'm looking forward to hearing about that.
I think Brett's got something. Or, I'm sorry, Patrick.
Kind of following up with what Ryan said about sending us articles, conferences and events, please also send those along. I mean, we do look for those to see what's out there. But if you have something coming up in Florida, Please also send that to us.
I think we have a no backsies rule, but I'd like to an exemption to that and ask you what the deadline is for article submissions.
So for our next edition, which will come out the first week of January, that's going to be December 10th. It's a little bit early just because we have holidays coming through, so we want to make sure we get everything in and out the door. So December 10th for all copy to patrick@floridaspecifier.com.
Yeah, and if you need help putting it together, your conceptual idea for an article, give Patrick a call or an email. He likes working through those issues with folks as well.
I do.
So much.
A resounding yes.
It's a servant's heart, Patrick.
He's our publisher and our leader. We appreciate him.
Thank you, Ryan. Didn't know where that was going to go.
I think that about covers it. Thanks for listening to the Florida Specifier podcast. If you like what you hear, please be sure to hit subscribe on whatever platform you use to listen. And don't forget to leave a 5-star rating and review. If you don't like what you hear, it's Jamie's fault. We haven't blamed her yet. So do be sure to let her know. Don't hold it against the rest of us. I recommend subscribing to the Florida Specifier online. It's floridaspecifier.com, where you can read your environmental news and commentary the new, old-fashioned way. But do be sure to subscribe. It's easy, inexpensive, and offers a ton of ways to read, watch, listen, and learn at your fingertips. Your support, as always, is greatly appreciated.
Production of this podcast is by Carl Sorn and David Barfield at Lonely Fox Studios, and we want to thank Bagels and Biscuits for letting us use their music for the podcast. Join us next time as we delve into the issues, policy, and people that environmental professionals and policymakers want to know about. For Jeff Littlejohn, Ryan Matthews, and Brett Cyphers, I'm Patrick Gillespie, and Brett made me do this outro. We'll see you next time.